What's up, guys? Welcome to another exciting edition of Real Estate Podcast, episode 355. I'm here with Griffin.
I'm here with Trav.
And I'm looking for an attorney to sue whoever decided on Henry Cavill's hairdo without him.
We watched Argyle.
Argilly. We finally got to it, guys. It only came out in February.
Yeah.
It's already on VOD.
I don't think it did very well in the...
It bombed. No, it didn't bomb. It imploded.
Well, I mean, they gave it a bad release time.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
To be fair. I mean... And then... They didn't really market it to the James Bond crowd. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, when I looked it up and was like, oh, this is the guy that done the Kingsman.
Yeah, yeah.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
Oh, I mean, the cinematic flair of Kingsman is absolutely there.
Oh, for sure.
Present. Yeah. I mean, it may not have been as effective, but, you know, it was a very colorful movie.
Very.
Yes. Yeah. I feel like if they would have gave it a better release date and marketed it to the right people, to the right demographic, then I think that it probably would have made more money. Because, I mean, this was a spy thriller.
Comedy.
Yeah. I mean, a spy action thriller comedy. Yeah. Through and through. I just feel like, I mean, even getting over the whole, like, klutzy girl thing, you know, klutzy woman thing for the first, you know, little bit of it. I mean, even after that, which I didn't hate that at all, but I can see where that might turn some of your traditional, like, oh, I'm a James Bond fan. I could see where that might turn some people off, but, like, I don't know. I think it deserves better than what it got.
Well, they missed the Sam Rockwell crowd.
Exactly.
Because they didn't really push it as this. He's in this. He's about 90% of the movie. I mean, not Henry Cavill.
Honestly, steals the show.
He steals the show.
For sure. Yeah.
There's one like set he of always does.
Yeah, for real.
I mean, his introduction in the film is great when they're on the train.
I'd say he saved it. I mean, like if he wasn't in this movie, I don't think I would have liked it.
Yeah.
As much. Or enjoyed it as much.
Yeah.
And be careful.
Yeah.
And I mean, speaking of people who are also pretty much non-existent in the film, John Cena, like.
Yeah.
That was a cameo.
At one point, all I saw was coffee.
Well, what's funny is the audience score on Rotten Tomatoes is a 72.
Yeah.
And then the one where the you know, the reviewers do it.
Yeah.
They gave it a 33.
Yeah.
Yeah, but here's my thing. I don't think it's that bad.
No.
Well, I mean, it's making fun of spy movies. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. I mean, it ham-fists every trope in there.
Yeah. So it's like, of course, you know, like going into it, knowing Matthew Vaughn and is attached to it and all that stuff. Like I, you know, with his way of over the topness and everything, like it's easier for me to go into that knowing exactly what I'm getting myself into as opposed to like, you know, so, but I didn't hate it. And like, I do like how they played up Henry Cavill and John Cena as like, you know, these super over the top, you know, super spies. Like, I don't know, dude. It was like, I would watch just those guys being spies. You know what I mean?
That'd be a great TV show.
Yeah. Right. Yeah.
I do think the whole like story within a story, you know, I mean, I know it gets ironed out that it's memories being, you know, MK Ultra through Bryce Dallas Howard's character. But I like that weird I don't know. I have a better word for it, that whole meta to it.
Yeah. It's it was interesting. I mean, in the way that like they had to let like the former CIA, you know, the head of the CIA and even Rockwell's characters, like the best thing to do is for her to like continue on her path for 5 years.
Yeah.
We're not gonna fuck with her or anything. We're just gonna see how all this plays out while the bad guys are like manipulating her. I get it. Like, you know, they're trying to figure out, you know, where the data and all that kind of stuff is. But at the same time, it's like, wouldn't they have tried to like reverse MK Ultra? You know what I mean?
Or tell you.
Yeah. Like, wouldn't they have at least tried some? It was very interesting that, you know.
Something I also noticed too, because they ended up having it be a heavy, you know, like they actually made it a motif in the film. How quick somebody snatched up that new Beatles song.
Yeah.
And threw it in the film.
I enjoyed it though. I mean, Sam Rockwell, dude. Yeah. He's just such a likable person.
The whole part where he's like, you mean to tell me that you shot me, a very small guy, right between the heart, from an idea that one of your fans sent you for a twist in book 5? Yeah, pretty much. I want to meet that fan.
When she shot him, I was like, what the fuck?
Yeah, right.
Is she like, bad? She just remembered that she's a double agent.
I mean, that first, I mean, despite, you know, like Griffin stated, some of the klutzy, you know, the klutzy character, not, you know, trying to really make you feel like, okay, ain't no way the twists that are coming are going to happen, you know? But that first hour moves, like, they cram so much story in that first hour.
Yeah. They cram so much in that first hour, and then, like, it almost was, the pacing was almost thrown off because that, you know, Act 2 leading into Act 3 was kind of a drag in a lot of ways. Like, not to the point where it's almost unwatchable, but it's like, you know, she overhears him in the bathroom, and then she runs away, and then she calls the mom, and then that's when all that stuff starts to happen. And then it's like, all right, we're going to go to somewhere in France, and, you know, it's like we're introducing more characters and, like, trying to, like, fully figure out what's going on, and then it's like, bam, you realize that she's Argyle, you know, and then like from that point forward, it's like
she's one ridiculous scene after another.
Yes, yeah, it's and it's like she's a spy, but she's not a spy anymore, but she still has all the training and all this stuff, and then like she finds out they've got to go meet the Keeper of Secrets.
Yeah, you know, she goes from being dumb to just, you know, kind of dumb.
Oh, dude, I was like, Einhorn's Finkel. Yeah, Einhorn. The Whirly Bird?
Yeah, dude. The Whirly Bird.
What? I was like, look at this whirling dervish they're doing over here.
The two action pieces I enjoyed watching them because they were artfully or well choreographed and all that. But the reasoning was fucking stupid, or the way they wrote it in, like when her and Rockwell dance and they have all those multicolored smoke grenades and
they're was just wild. In there.
Yeah. But it just killed me how that scene amounted to, like, they're just in there massacring Bryan Cranston's men. He's like easily, like, the whole squad gets destroyed. Then he's like, wait, got the vents on.
Yeah.
Like, it was fucking, it was so stupid.
But when he picked her up like that, I went, cap.
Yeah. And
look, listen, Bryce Dallas Howard is a beautiful woman.
For sure.
But her, like, there was just this
watching
weird...
her fight.
Yeah.
It didn't look, it looked weird, like it wasn't her, like something was off. Like when she was in there doing like Liam Neeson shit, I was like, something was weird. Like this was shot at a slower speed and then like, sped up.
I feel like if you cut the sound, you would have heard some really out of shape, like,
oh, like, yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Not that it mattered, but I thought that was, and then of course the oil skating scene. I mean, dude, at one point when she's gliding and she's just slicing everyone's tendons, I'm like, isn't anybody going to move out of the way?
Yeah.
Like there's like 20 guys.
Oil works like that.
Yeah. Right.
I don't think that's like,
never mind that.
And then they make a point to be like, well, we're not going to fire the gun anymore. And then she gets the gun and just starts shooting it everywhere. And it's like, so she's like, is this a murder suicide situation that's fixing to happen here? It's like, what are we doing?
Violation. I mean,
yeah, right.
Right. Shutting it down, dude.
Yeah. No, that hallway sequence. That to me was one of my favorite parts of the movie because it's just so fucking ridiculous. You know what I mean? Like,
when they come out of that apartment.
No, whenever they with the grenades, the colorful smoke grenades.
Oh, don't get me wrong. It was absolutely fun to watch. I just thought that in the context of the movie, it was just, it was a little.
It was random.
Yeah.
But
y'all know a whirly bird's a helicopter.
Yeah.
Okay. Definitely look like a helicopter.
That one shot. I always like it because you see it in other films where they're dealing with. Like a story's been being written and the audience is getting to see the visual representation of it.
Yeah.
So when the author fucks up, you see it in the play out. You
He's
know?
Like, I wouldn't say that. This doesn't sound
good. Yeah, I love how the fire, the way the fireworks reverse back in and all that stuff. And just even those moments too, where he's like, come on, El, figure it the fuck out. You know, like when he kind of.
When he threw that cat off that roof.
Yeah.
The way that he just reached behind her and come up, and then she's like, oh, what are you doing? And he just lets it go. It was so funny.
Yeah.
There was another one that was pretty good too, was when he whenever Sam Rockwell's fighting on the train. And there's that whole moment right before that fight kicks off where he's talking to her, but as she's blinking. Like when everything first starts kind of wigging the fuck out for her.
Yeah.
And you see just as she's blinking, it's cutting between Rockwell and Cavill.
Yeah.
I thought that was really fucking cool.
Yeah, you could see her eyelashes too.
Yeah.
Like in the shot.
Oh yeah. It felt like a cutscene in a video game where like you have to make a couple choices as like it's playing out. It's like, you know, blah, 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 blinks, you know, what are the numbers, Mason? Like a prompt comes up that's like, think about the numbers. Who gives a shit? Get up and start walking, you know?
Yeah. But yeah, overall, I very much enjoyed the movie. Like, this is going in with, you know, at least for me, with the Kingsman stuff. And whenever you look at, like, what Matthew Vaughn has done, it's like... Why have they not give him Deadpool? Like his, I think me personally, like the way that he shoots, the like his comedic sensibilities would work very well with Ryan Reynolds' comedic sensibilities. And like his choice of visuals would complement. I don't understand why that hasn't happened yet. But whenever you look at his filmography here, you know, he did Layer Cake and then Stardust, Kick-Ass, X-Men First Class, the Kingsman stuff, and then Argyle. And it's like
he's a lot of good shit too, like Rocket Man.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, dude.
Fantastic Four.
Hey, I mean, you can definitely tell that the Kingsman films helped him solidify style. Like he has like a signature look now.
Yeah.
Like sure. You can almost like you can tell from the trailers to the cinematics. You can like you
it
can
would
almost
fit Deadpool.
Yeah.
And I agree too. Like, I mean, I think with, I mean, like you guys said, when quoting his filmography, like he did, what was it? First Class.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Which is arguably the best of those prequel X-Men movies.
And close to being the best X-Men movie, period. You know, like I would put it in the top three. You know what I mean? Like,
oh, I mean, the big like Magneto crossing the line scene where he finally plants the coin between Bacon's head and like Xavier's flipping the fuck out because he can feel it because he's inside dude's mind.
Yeah.
So I didn't know this, but he got his start doing Lock, Stock, Two Smoking Barrels, producing. He did that. Mm. Snatch.
There is a guy Ritchie,
yeah,
tinge to this movie.
Yeah.
Like if you told me Guy Ritchie directed it, I'd believe you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's
yeah, for sure.
He's like the visual Guy Ritchie, where Guy Ritchie is the dialogue. You know what I'm saying? Like,
well, Guy Ritchie's got Jason Statham.
Yeah, well, yeah. But you know, he goes all in with his dialogue, and a lot of the overtop stuff that happens is just like the situational and then the reactions of the people. Whereas like Matthew Vaughn is more of like, I'm going to show you something absolutely fucking ridiculous and you're just going to have to accept it for what it is. You know, like
in his church.
Yeah. It's like, it's going to be insane. So,
his choice of disco was interesting.
Never seen Layer Cake.
I don't think I have either, that but
view.
Yeah.
That's some early Daniel Craig.
Yeah.
And then yeah, he produced a Lock, Stock TV show with 7 episodes. What?
Yeah, there's a Snatch and a Gentleman TV series, believe it or not. So, but I'm going to give it a full star. I very, very much enjoyed it.
I give it a star.
Same star.
Can't wait to see the Kingsman stuff. I haven't watched the Kingsman yet, so.
Is that the prequel?
Yeah.
So good.
Yeah.
Loved it.
I gotta get on that for sure. But we got a little bit of movie news I'm going to hit real quick here. So first up, Anthony Hopkins to star in another reimagining of the Island of Dr. Moreau.
Oh, my God.
Damn.
Per Deadline, Hopkins, who is recognized for his role as Hannibal Lecter and Odin, will take the part of Dr. Moreau, brilliant geneticist who isolates himself after his government funding is cut off when an experiment goes haywire. When two documentary filmmakers embark on a quest for discovery, they soon find their journey turned into a fight for survival thanks to Moreau's mad mutations. The movie marks Hopkins' 95th feature film appearance.
Damn.
Eyes in the Trees will be directed, I guess that's what they're going for. That's the name. Eyes in the Trees will be directed by Timothy Woodward Jr. with a script by B. Harrison Smith and Mike Manning. Artisha Mann Cooper is set to produce the film alongside Damon Hillen and Sasha Yulin. There's no word yet on additional casting or when the movie might head into production. He turned 86 recently.
Damn.
Yeah. But how old was Brando when he did it?
That was in 96. Let's see. Hang on. Damn, he was born in 1924. Holy shit.
Yeah. Well, he was 80 when he passed. Brando was. So.
He was 72. That was,
yeah.
Dude, that movie, he's a trip in that shit.
Yeah,
dude, I got a documentary on my Plex server about the making of it. It was hell making that movie.
Yeah, I've heard it was bad.
Every time I think of Dr. Moreau, I just see him sitting there in that fucking hat.
Yeah,
right. His face, that little man that he had with him, the little.
Yeah.
What a fucking strange movie. They made Eyes, there was another the version in the 70s that they made.
I wonder how that is. But yeah, I'm interested in checking this out. And it's interesting that they're going from a documentary filmmaker perspective on it. That's going to be interesting, you know? So, also John Wick TV series is now in the works. So, courtesy of Lionsgate, the vice chairman of Lionsgate, Michael Burns, revealed some information about the small screen project set in the violent world of Baba Yaga during a recent Q&A at the Morgan Stanley Media Conference and teased the continuation of the John Wick franchise with further spinoffs. I think we'll take one of our great action franchises starring Keanu Reeves. I think it'll be a television series. At present, wider details regarding the John Wick TV series remain unknown, but the show does come following the franchise's recent foray into serial storytelling with Peacock's prequel, The Continental, from the world of John Wick. Following Colin Woodell as a young Winston Scott, the series explores how the character came to his position as proprietor of the New York branch of the Continental. Speaking with Ian McShane here, who plays Winston Scott throughout the John Wick movies, declared that he has no time for the Continental, revealing that no one involved in the franchise was asked about it. No, I wouldn't watch it. I have no intentions. Nobody. I don't think Keanu watched it. Neither has Chad. It has nothing to do with our movies. It's just a question of a TV company cashing in on the series and taking the option to air. They never asked us about anything, so why would I be interested in seeing it? I'm afraid their arrogance is getting the show out is beyond me, so I wish them well. I think it's come and gone, hasn't it?
Is he talking about the Continental?
Yeah.
Listen, man. It's kind of better than the John Wick movies. Here's why.
I've heard good things.
There's a fucking plot. Right?
Right.
It's not just wicking out. Like, my car, my dog, you know?
Yeah.
Like, they're trying to, someone's running the Continental, they're trying to get it. Like, it goes deep into the, my grandfather even liked it more than.
There was an actual story to tell.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, and it goes like, there's some shit going on behind the scenes. I don't know if you guys have watched this. I'm like, I'm not saying nothing, but.
Yeah, I haven't watched it.
There's stuff to it. Right. It was good. So fuck what he says. He's just mad because he wasn't in it.
It is strange that there's a perspective like that for the show. It's like a John Wick show itself is going to be a harder order to fill because, I mean, they're going to have to be topping John Wick Chapter 4.
Right.
And at least on a stunt level, that movie is fucking nuts.
Yeah. Well, speaking of
John Wick to stay dead.
Right. Well, it says that John Wick 5 is reportedly in the cards with Lionsgate Motion Picture Group chair Joe Drake recently revealing that work is now underway on the script following the conclusion of the WGA strike. On the Wick side, we got multiple spinoffs in Wick 5. We started to work on it right when the writer's strike started, and we've gotten back to work as soon as it ended. If that wasn't already enough, John Wick director Chad Stahelski has also revealed that an anime series is in the works. So we're really looking forward to that. We're really excited about it because we're doing that and a Japanese anime because I love Japanese anime so much. So to create all the cool stories that anime could achieve better than we could in the TV show to expand our world, we'll still get our fix, you know what I mean? And we'll still have all the fun. So they're working on
the cool thing with the cool thing with them having an anime approach or just animation in general is that they'll be able to go there like budget that, you know, they won't be limited. So they could just take this story off the fucking rails.
Yeah.
Y'all remember when we did the movies, we talked about it like kind of feeling like an anime.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah,
absolutely.
So that makes sense.
Yeah. And then, of course, Ballerina is scheduled to be released as of right now on June the 6th, 2025. So we've got a lot of wickedness going on here. Some wicked wickedness.
The fucking cash cow.
Yeah. And if they do a John Wick TV series, it's got to be a prequel, right?
That show kind of set up, you remember, like it's going to be him as a kid.
Yeah.
Going to the place, you know, whatever.
Mm-hmm. Right. So, I mean, it looks like they have a lot of stuff. Yeah. If we got the Continental, Ballerina is going to be the spinoff of the, from what, John Wick 2 or 3. The potential John Wick prequel about his story, an anime. I'm assuming it would be stupid for them to not have the anime take place in Tokyo, right?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, it would be interesting if that told an entire story through the Tokyo Continental.
Yeah.
Because that's the cool part about the John Wick universe is that, or like something that came to my mind was
pick
like
a country.
Those hotels can be hubs for different stories that don't even.
And there's so many assassins. I mean, they did it in the Continental. They just brought in a whole new gang of motherfuckers. Like,
right. So yeah, we got some wicked wickedness happening here. Ooh. So be on the lookout for that. So. This is something that I thought was interesting. James Gunn eyes collaboration with Flash star Grant Gustin for DCU projects. So James Gunn's vision for the future of DC Universe has been a topic of much speculation and excitement. Amid the buzz, a recent revelation has sparked interest among DC fans. Gunn's openness to collaborating with Grant Gustin, best known for his portrayal of the Flash in the Arrowverse. Of course, I'd love to work with him at some point. Possibility of a partnership between Gunn and Gustin arises as the latter concludes his role as the Flash, leaving fans excited about the talented actor's future endeavors. Gustin's post-Flash career is already off to a promising start with roles in the romantic comedy Puppy Love and the upcoming biopic Operation Blue Eyes, where he will portray Barry Keenan, the mastermind behind the infamous kidnapping of Frank Sinatra Jr. Moreover, Gustin's foray into theater with a lead role in the Broadway musical Water for Elephants showcases his range and dedication. This is what Gunn had to say. Grant is an incredibly talented guy performing now on Broadway, I believe, and is absolutely not going to waste just because he's not currently in a DC project. But of course, I'd love to work with him at some point. What if they bring him back as the Flash?
As a Flash.
I mean,
well, he keeps his nose clean. That's plus.
Yeah.
He kind of fits the look of the Flash too, man.
I mean, the Flash TV series, I haven't watched all of it, of course. But it's really good. And like,
yeah, it's like any long form show. It's got seasons that are a little weaker than others, but I mean,
but it's also really good for, was it CW?
Yeah.
Like, when they started churning out that kind of content, it was like, okay, wait a minute now. We might have to give this a chance. Like,
yeah.
At first, the first couple of seasons were great, in my opinion.
Yeah. Man, did he get I've watched the first four seasons, I think, of it.
There is 9 seasons.
Yeah.
184 episodes.
Yeah.
Damn.
So, and I thought he did great as Barry and as the Flash. Like, he did a great job at being able to split those two, but still remain. He did a Tom Holland with it. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, he did a great job at splitting the two, and being believable as both.
And
so
he never kidnapped anyone.
Not yet.
Or beat up a lady that was doing karaoke.
Yeah, not yet, you know? So next up here, there's rumors going around that, they may cast Giancarlo Esposito as Professor X and Denzel Washington as Magneto.
I saw this on X.
So Giancarlo has came out, right? He's responded to fan casting suggesting that he should play Professor Xavier in the MCU reboot of the X-Men. Speaking with Amon Warman, the actor revealed that he had seen the casting suggestion online and that he does think about it, though there is one thing about the role that poses a problem for him. I've given it a cursory glance in my brain, and immediately I go, it would be great to play Professor X and some other incarnation that just the wheelchair. What? It would be great to play Professor X in some other incarnation than just the wheelchair, right? Because the physical idea of being in a wheelchair every single day does not appeal to me. I just don't feel that old, and I don't like to sit that much. However, despite his reluctance to play the role due to the physical idea of being in a wheelchair all the time, Esposito did go on to add that there are potential ways around that, but certainly we could figure something out maybe. Professor X wasn't always in the wheelchair, but that is part of his character development, so I think about it a little bit, but I don't give it all my thought because it would have to come to me. What do you guys think about those two?
Oh, dude. Fucking Denzel Washington would be like, you know, I get surgical with this shit.
I feel like he'd be chewing gum going,
yeah,
I can move the iron. You'd be playing
basketball at Pelican Bay.
No, like for real though, him as Professor X would be great. I'd enjoy it. But instead of Denzel Washington, and I hate that he's already been cast in the MCU, but I think Idris Elba would play a good Magneto.
Yes, I agree.
Nah, I won't buy Eli.
I really like that movie a lot.
I was blind the whole time.
I know,
right? He was blind the whole time.
He memorized God, really was on cover the side to cover.
I would like to see Gus is a good guy.
Oh, yeah.
Like, I don't think we've ever seen him in a role where he's a good guy, right?
Look, listen, and don't, I mean, whenever you look at the link in the channel here, I mean, goddamn, it's even perfect coloring. Dude, he should play Zordon in a Power Rangers movie. Like, think Ranger. About it.
Yeah.
Even his voice would be, you know, add a little
bird. You better bring me the Sith Rangers. Look at me, Hector.
Alpha.
Look at me, Green Ranger.
I need teenagers with attitude.
I think that his disposition would be great for Professor X. Because Professor X, unless he's dealing with some crazy mind nonsense that's happening, is always like very reserved and very cautious. You know what I mean? And I think that like he would do a great job at portraying that.
And that like look he gives where he doesn't move.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know?
We'll see. And that alone what you're saying, Adam, I mean, think about it. With Breaking Bad, with The Mandalorian, the guy's a great bad guy.
Yeah.
Like, he's good at holding that gaze, or he's good at playing the kind of character.
I mean, he could even play Magneto.
Yeah. For sure.
Yeah.
But he's good at playing the villain that you feel like, man, he might win.
I'm still on board with that Mr. Freeze.
Oh, I think he would be perfect. Yeah.
Let's make it James Gunn on the phone.
I forgot about that too. You mentioned it, Adam. That's like dream casting level.
Just right seeing there. The picture of him and and you know, the costume was better. The one in the movie back in the day kind of looked, it was just goofy. It was big, bulky, you know, over the top.
There's such a good story to tell with Mr. Freeze too in the Batman universe.
Yes, absolutely.
Well, like he's a good bad guy.
Yes.
You know what I mean? Well, kind of like Thanos, man.
He takes the sympathetic villain and tones it down. Well, I mean, it's outrageous. He's Mr. Freeze for crying out loud. But the story, though, makes it to where you're like, he's fucking these people up, but you're kind of like, I kind of get why he's doing it.
Yeah, I mean.
Yeah.
Oh, and then if they bring him back, he's going to be fighting global warming. That's right. I mean, Mr. Freeze takes on global warming. But since you brought X-Men up, you guys saw where they fired the creator of X-Men 97?
Yeah,
that's crazy. Show is about to drop.
Yeah.
And they fired the creator.
I wonder if they got rid of him before any backlash. Which, that trailer looks like a banger, man.
I don't know what's going on there. It's kind of hush-hush.
Yeah.
But it's weird to fire the creator like 3 weeks before it comes out, or a week.
Yeah. And he also worked on Moon Knight, and he was working on Blade as well. Mm. So he might have had some creative differences with some people. You know, because Blade's, like, Moon Knight's already done. X-Men 97's done. It's fixing to come out. But, like, Blade, it's been almost...
War, man.
Yeah, it's almost been in development hell, you know? So,
I mean, a lot of that development hell, sadly, is because Mashal Ali was like, dude, you guys can't write this character for shit, and I won't play it unless he's written well.
Well, yeah. I'm seeing here
or
that...
at least that's what the reports were.
He was the writer on The Witcher Season 1 and 2. He may be one of those guys that was like, no, we have to do this a certain way. And they're like, yeah, can't do
that's
that.
That's true.
Yeah, like, because... well, I'm not going to bend the knee. I mean, I'm not putting the dress on, so.
Yeah, so. But Juan Carlo here, he addressed the idea of playing Xavier, revealing how much he would like to play the Marvel icon. Even back in 2022, he said, I'd love that. I'd play that character with force, grace, and calm. Someone who controls the chaos, but someone who also has the ability to uplift and inspire. He gets the assignment. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I mean, dude, he fucking nailed it.
Yeah.
I don't think Denzel would do it.
Nah, I mean, I think he'll be in.
Has he ever, I don't know though, because has he ever done a superhero film? Those actors, man, they got rules about being superheroes.
I could see Denzel Washington playing someone like a General Ross variant or a General Rikers.
Yeah.
Like, I could see him being one of those.
Oh, yeah.
Like, fanatical military people that kind of become part of a hero's origin story, you know?
Yeah. So, I would like to see that, though. Get Gus in there, please. So Bob Iger believes that Deadpool and Wolverine will be one of the more successful Marvel movies.
Oh, shit, Sherlock.
Yeah. Iger also addressed the notion of, quote, audience fatigue and insisted the Marvel Cinematic Universe's success was, quote, not an accident. According to Business Insider, the MCU has made over $29 billion so far at the global box office. Iger continued to argue the point at the conference by saying, a lot of people think it's audience fatigue. It's not audience fatigue. They want great films, and if you build it great, they will come. And there are countless examples of that. Some are ours and some are others. Oppenheimer is a perfect example of that. Just a fantastic film. Bob Iger has high hopes for Deadpool and Wolverine. While some MCU films like the Marvels disappointed at the box office, Marvel has still enjoyed their fair share of success stories since the record-setting ways of Avengers Endgame in 2019. For instance, Spider-Man No Way Home made $1.92 billion, and it even dropped during the COVID-19 pandemic. So, as the Disney CEO points out, it may not be audience fatigue after all, Iger said in the same interview. Focus is really important. We reduce the output of Marvel, both the numbers of films they make and the number of TV shows, and that really becomes critical. But I feel good about the team. I feel good about the IP we're making. I talked about a lot of the projects. We look years ahead, really. It's iterative. Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3 became the second highest grossing installment in that particular series, making a total of $846 million. Today, of course, James Gunn's working on the DCU. Not only do you look at the films you're making, this is another quote from Iger. Not only do you look at the films you're making, you look at every part of the process, who the directors are, who's being cast, reading scripts. I personally watch films 3 to 5 times with the team and just create a culture of excellence and respect, which is really important with the creative community. And again, the track record speaks for itself. I think the most important thing that Bob Iger and the rest of the team over at Marvel needs to understand is, like, you can reduce the output of Marvel. Sure. You can say that it's audience fatigue or superhero fatigue. Sure. But really what it comes down to is people are going to pay to see you tell the stories that are interesting to them. So if we're going to look at Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3 versus the Marvels, which one of those two stories were more interesting? Which one of those two movies had the more interesting characters in it?
Yeah,
which
one of those likable characters? Like,
yeah. So like that's what Bob and the rest of the Marvel team needs to understand is like you said here, they want great films, and if you build it great, they will come. Okay, building great films doesn't mean that you're pushing something specific. It means that you're catering to your audience, right?
Mm-hmm.
And what is your most popular demographic for Marvel movies?
I would say males.
I would say
young adults.
But, okay. If it's young adults, though, then wouldn't the Marvels have made potentially more?
Oh,
nerds.
It would have. It would have. But the problem with the Marvels isn't the demographic it was aimed after. It was the movie shit writing.
Right. I mean, so I believe if the writing team would have focused that movie more so as a traditional superhero flick and kind of like catered towards the audience that likes and enjoys that character, then it would have made more. The most of the people that are paying to watch your movie, that are going to the movie theater to watch your movie, yeah, it might be young adults, it might be kids, but like you gotta like look at what the greater audience wants in that situation, because they've been catering to the young kids and it's gotten them mixed results.
They've lost a lot of money.
Yeah.
And I agree. And I see what you're saying. Like these characters, while the movies are being targeted at young adults, the movies characters and the stories are pertaining to the popularity and the people that are going to spend money on it are the folks that are our age and older, the ones that have that grew up.
The younger adults will get their chance down the line. And, you know what I mean? When we've moved on from a like,
and it's very much more prevalent now with the multiverse stuff they're throwing in, and you know, a lot of folks that you know that are our age didn't necessarily read the comic books. But the Infinity Saga had them by the eyes, man. Like, they were captivated by that shit. So where there was once few, there's now many. And, you know, it all plays into the greater picture. But it's just, I'm trying not to talk in circles, really, to be honest with y'all. But, like, it's like they aimed for a demographic that doesn't really care about it.
Yeah.
But every time you go to the theater to watch one of these movies, a lot of dudes.
Yeah.
Mostly dudes.
Yeah. And that's where I think that they need to understand. It's like, look, Deadpool is going to make so much fucking money because it's going to take all of the bullshit that's been tried to be pushed out and just like get rid of all that shit, discard all that shit, and tell the story that they want to tell. That's what Guardians of the Galaxy did. And that's what Spider-Man did. Like, it pushed all of the bullshit out that didn't necessarily need to be there. Or if you're going to do that, at least do it in a very interesting and creative kind of way, you know?
Well, also, a lot of hype behind this movie is that even though people are pumped for Deadpool and Ryan Reynolds, it's really Hugh Jackman people are excited the most about.
Well, them together.
Because it's a chance come together.
You see the poster? That's a cool poster.
I mean, it's a chance to see Hugh Jackman one more time as Wolverine. I mean, of course.
In the yellow suit.
Yeah, I mean, we get to see him with the Disney flair, the comic accuracy attempts, you know. And so, like, that's going to draw so many people
Rated
in.
R.
But even though Bob Iger might be right when he was saying that it's going to make a shit ton of money, because I mean, duh.
Yeah.
But it's also, though, don't get too cocky, because not every Marvel film is going to have that competitive edge. It's not going to have a star power. Like, next to Hugh Jackman, you'd have to bring either Patrick Stewart or any of the original X-Men actors, or you have to bring back Robert Downey Jr., and that's off the table.
Well, and that's what they're doing with Secret Wars. Yep. Like, they're already building up for all that. Because Secret Wars is going to bring back a lot of the original X-Men actors to play original X-Men characters. Hugh Jackman's already confirmed that he will be back in Secret Wars. Of course, Deadpool's going to be there. Like, that's what they're doing. Mm-hmm. They're doing a full active pivot, because they understand that it's like, this is what your audience wants. And they saw that with Spider-Man. And then also it's like, let's focus on the story here, and let's focus on like the characters themselves, and let's not focus as much on like all the chuffa. And so I think that Secret Wars is going to make a shitload of money. I know for a fact that Deadpool is going to make a shitload of money. And I think Deadpool is going to almost be a Marvel rebranding. If they do the right thing, it will be.
I definitely think they're going to try to pivot and almost make Deadpool be the face of Marvel for a little while.
Yeah.
Well, they signed him to some ridiculous amount of like 20 pictures.
Yeah.
They've got him under contract for a long time.
Yeah.
I think this is a good move. This is the best way to bring the two IPs together.
I agree. And you know, with Deadpool, you're getting this more arrogant, in your face, don't give a shit about, you know what I mean? Like, there's a certain stigma that's lost.
He opened with pegging.
Yes, exactly.
Like, it might be new to Disney, but it's not new to me.
Yeah.
So you know? It's like, whoa.
Yeah. So I do feel like a full pivot's happening. And that might be why, you know, dude from X-Men 97, you know, was, I don't know. There might be other people that pivot. Who knows? Nobody really knows what's happening behind the scenes over there. But like, I'm glad that they're slowing down and actually thinking about the movies they're making, because we've had some real stinkers in the last group of Marvel movies. Yeah.
Well, the amount of money they lost.
Yes.
They're like, whoa. Even on the Disney remakes.
Yeah.
They fired that person. It's like, they're like, man, we're bleeding money.
Yeah. I lose money.
Well, yeah, it's like, you know, the thing that a lot of those movies have is they have some cool scenes, but that doesn't mean it's going to carry the film.
Yeah.
No, and it doesn't. I mean, they brought Namor in, and it couldn't save that Black Panther shit show. Like, let's call a spade, you know, like, so. But yeah, I'm interested to see the new Marvel.
The new MCU.
And see what they decide to do.
Well, the fact that Disney's going an R rating, right?
Yes.
Wild.
Yeah. Never thought it would happen.
No. But they have to. There's no choice.
No.
They have to.
Yeah. You're right.
Honorable mention, before we move on, I had the Oscar ship. I was like, oh, I see you already got it here.
Yeah.
Venom 3 got its title.
Oh, yeah.
The Last Dance.
Yeah.
Shit, what?
Yeah, The Last Dance. What's that cameo? And
yeah, oh, right. Never mind. Well, and then there was like, I saw a quote from, oh my God, Michael Keaton. Oh. Because, you know, he showed up at the end of fucking goddamn. The vampire movie, Morbius. You know, that they brought the vulture into Morbius and all that stuff. And his quote was like, I showed up one day, we shot it. Nobody knew what the fuck was happening. Nobody had a fucking clue what we were doing.
That sounds
it was
just about right.
Yeah. It was just some last minute fucking pigeonhole type shit that happened.
And Sony like, wanted okay. to do.
Yeah, right. So he's like, I don't know what that means. I don't know how this affects anything. And so.
Well, they were trying to get hype.
Yeah.
But it just, that was the best part of the movie, really.
Yeah.
Like, holy shit, it's Michael Keaton.
It's Morbin time, dude. So we do have the complete Oscar winners list. So we're going to just start at the top here. Best Picture, of course, went to Oppenheimer. Best Actor in a Leading Role went to Cillian Murphy.
Clean sweep.
Yeah.
They got 7.
Best Actress in a Leading Role was Emma Stone for Poor Things.
Next movie that we're watching.
Yeah. Best Actor in a Supporting Role, RDJ. For Oppenheimer, Robert Downey. Best Actress in a Supporting Role was Devine Joy Randolph for The Holdovers. I've heard really good things about The Holdovers, by the way.
There's there may be a lawsuit.
Yeah,
saw that? Where somebody's got a script or something, and it's like exactly the same.
Yeah.
Like, ruh-roh.
Yeah, what have we? Best Director went to, of course, Nolan for Oppenheimer.
Earned it.
Best Writing for Adapted Screenplay was American Fiction. Best Writing Original Screenplay went to Anatomy of a Fall. Best International Film went to The Zone of Interest.
W.
Best Animated Feature Film was The Boy and the Heron. Best Documentary... Best live action short film, best documentary short film, best animated short film, best film editing went to Oppenheimer, best cinematography went to Oppenheimer, best production, best production design went to Poor Things.
Makes sense.
Best costume design went to Poor Things.
I thought those two kind of go together, but okay.
Yeah. Best music original score went to Oppenheimer. Best makeup and hairstyle went to Poor Things. Best sound went to The Zone of Interest, which is fucking wild.
That
because
is wild.
One thing that you remember about that movie, you know, and it went
it
up against
stands out.
Yeah, it went up against The Creator, Maestro, Mission Impossible, Dead Reckoning, and Oppenheimer, and it won. That's wild. Best visual effects, Godzilla Minus One.
This was amazing.
Yes.
These dudes came up on stage and one of them was holding like a little Godzilla toy.
Yeah.
They were so happy, you know?
Yeah, that was the director.
That's awesome.
Oh, I was happy to see him win that.
Well deserved.
7 Oscars.
I mean,
dude,
hell.
He won an Oscar on a $15 million budget.
They were so happy too. They were like Japanese happy. Like, ooh, you know?
Yeah. I mean, just from the winners that we have here, Oppenheimer and Poor Things seem to sweep everything just about it. You know what I mean? So, but hats off to them. Oppenheimer was a great flick. So it's no surprise.
I knew he was going to get an Oscar, Cillian Murphy.
Yeah.
I knew it. I was like, yeah, that's.
I was honestly, and whenever you look at like best actor in a leading role, nobody from Killers of the Flower Moon was nominated.
No.
The chick was.
Yeah, she was for best actress.
Yeah.
But for best actor, nobody.
Which is wild that Leo wasn't on the.
Yeah.
They're like, we gave him an Oscar already.
Yeah.
Like for real?
Yeah.
Well, the best supporting role. No, Robert De Niro. Oh, he is. He's in there.
Yeah, he's on
okay.
there. He's Robert De Niro. Let's see. Best director, he got nominated. Scorsese got nominated. best writing, adapted screenplay. I mean, that was based off of a book. Like, I don't know. I'm not saying that Killers of the Flower Moon was better than Oppenheimer. Don't get me. I'm not saying that, but it's wild that, like, it didn't get nominated for more stuff.
Yeah.
You know?
Because they're completely different movies.
Yeah, for sure. I mean,
they hold their own in their category.
Yeah. Both by.
I've heard good shit about that Anatomy of a Fall. I actually heard Bill Burr talking about it. He said he loved it. I think it's a foreign. I've got it up.
I mean,
I haven't watched it yet. It's like a little thriller.
Yeah.
Crime thriller, you know.
Oh, I'm sure that I'm surprised we haven't watched that yet. Woman is suspected of murder after her husband's death. Their half-blind son faces a moral dilemma as the main witness.
Wow.
It is a foreign. Yeah. Yeah, I have to. We'll have to throw that on the pile. 2.5 hours. All right.
Damn.
Drama. Yeah. All right. But yeah, that was all the movie news I had this week. It's a good week.
Nobody watched the Oscars. I like to get the clips.
Yeah.
You know.
Watch Satan.
But it was just above the lowest ratings they've had. It was just above that. Barely scraped by.
Well,
yeah. We're skipping trailers because we got a little bit of a time crunch here. Next week, Poor Things. Excited to watch this?
Yes.
We're going to see why. Just from seeing the trailer, like, Emma Stone put on a hell of a show, I think. That's why she...
Just from scrolling through Twitter, X, whatever, I can tell that Emma Stone puts on a good show.
Yeah. Because people were pissed that she beat out the chick from Killers of the Flower Moon. It's right. Like, well, have you seen the movie? Because...
Yeah.
I haven't seen it yet. Once I see it, then I'll be like, oh, okay. For most of the time, that chick was just sick. Like,
I just remember the trailer was very odd.
Yeah. This is directed by the same guy that did Dogtooth, by the way.
Down.
Yeah.
Wow.
And it's got a... Yeah. It's got a very Terry Gilliam look to it.
It does.
Which I'm excited about. So,
I mean, you can't out Terry the Gilliam.
You can try.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah.
But yeah, I'm excited for Poor Things.
Poor Things. Next week.
Oh, yeah.
Checks in the mail.
And the flag's raised.